You're listening to the ESP, the European Skeptics Podcast, an independent weekly show set out to bring you news, interesting topics and interviews with people mostly from Europe, building bridges and breaking down language barriers to show the world how active and awesome the skeptical movement is in the region. This is episode 422. I'm your host, Andreas Pinter, and joining me for the show is my co-host, Pontus Beckmann. See ya!
Hey son, Andreas! Where are you? You are very far away.
Well, pretty far away. Well, I could be further, but I'm currently in Taiwan.
Oh.
In the southwestern part of Taiwan, so far from where the earthquake happened.
Wow.
You probably heard about it.
I heard about the earthquake, yes. It was a hard one, but not too many casualties, I understand.
No, so far the number is at 16.
16
of
wow,
the casualties, about 1,000, yeah, about 1,100 injuries. Yeah, relative to how big the earthquake was, I think thanks to, well, pretty reasonable construction attitudes and preparedness regarding safety, I think the situation is pretty good.
Were you there when it happened?
No. But it almost got cancelled. So we were actually thinking about whether we should cancel the tour. So the tour was heading out from Hungary a day after the earthquake hit, the major one. I mean, even since then, there have been several aftershocks. Well, dozens of it. Some of them I even have felt. So
it was... Well, it's a bit scary, isn't it?
A bit scary. Yeah, it is. But interestingly, no one ended up canceling their own trips of my tour. So I came with a complete group, a full number of people. Yeah, and they are being happy about the tour. At least that's what I hear. And this is a fascinating country. I love this country. So I should have started the show with saying ni hao.
Yeah, okay, yes.
something
ni hao
like
to you
that.
Too, sir.
So how are you? And where are you? You're at home.
I'm at home. There's nothing shaking here. It's a very stable environment, I'm happy to report. Business as usual at my end. There's one thing, though. I have mentioned a couple of times a cardinal, a Swedish cardinal, the only Swedish cardinal ever, Anders Arborelius. People may not be aware, but I talked about it quite a time, some time ago. My mother used to babysit him when he was a small boy. So I have a sort of a connection to him. And I also met his half-sister, which is a totally different story, just a couple of weeks ago. I didn't know he had a half-sister, but we came to talk about it. However, that's not the news. The news is that since he became a cardinal in 2017, I have been joking and said, well, maybe he becomes the next pope for me to talk about on this show. But it was a joke to me because that's never going to happen. That's my opinion. It's still my opinion. But on 30th of March, there was an article in the French newspaper Le Figaro, and it was speculating in possible successors to Frankie, and Arborelius was named as one of three people. People that they call, so you call them papabile. That's not French, that's Italian, which means you are a person that...
Potential pope.
Potential pope, yeah, that's right. The other people that was mentioned was Pietro Parolin, which I've talked about quite a bit. Yeah. He's the Secretary of State in the Vatican, so he's quite high up there already. And Andras, the third person, was a Hungarian archbishop called Peter Erdő.
Peter Erdő.
Yeah? Yeah. Have you heard of him before?
Yeah. He's a quite a common household name here in Hungary. Mm-hmm. So probably everyone knows about him. He's famous. He's famous.
Yeah. Do you think he will become the next pope, or how should you know?
Well, how should I know? Yeah. I've heard that he's papable.
Papable, yes.
Papabile, he's papable.
Yeah.
I don't know. He doesn't seem to be like a terrible guy to sit on that throne. It's just, I don't know.
Yeah.
And I couldn't care less.
I don't think that the Swedish Arborelius could. I'm very surprised that they put him up as a candidate because he's a very, very I wouldn't say shy, but very, very private person. He doesn't say much. And when he's being interviewed, he's very evasive of anything that could be at all contentious or difficult questions. He always just hums and haws and doesn't give a straight reply to anything. So maybe only as a compromise, if you have the people who want to change the church and the ones that are very conservative, maybe he would perhaps be some sort of compromise. I don't think so. But anyway, it was funny to see him mentioned in that context. And of course, my mother was also a little bit, wow, yeah, okay. So maybe I I babysat a future pope. Who would have known?
Well, that would be, but that part would be amazing. I mean, just that kind of coincidence, I think. Yes.
I have to mention one thing more as I bring up the Vatican. I'm not going to do a full poke the pope, but after 5 years of hard work, apparently, Frankie just approved a 20-page declaration called Dignitas Infinita, so infinite dignity or something, to establish that in their world, in the world of the Vatican, in the Catholic world, where they have imaginary friends and whatever, there can never be anything but two distinct genders. And these genders can only be based on the biological sex established at conception, quote unquote. That's what they wrote.
At conception.
Yeah. And this little
It's not even when it's biologically established.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Well, then you have to count chromosomes. And even we scientifically literate people know that that isn't straightforward either, because there are all kinds of variations there.
Developmental changes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So this little book, this little booklet that they released also makes clear that abortion is not acceptable because, quote, a child is always a gift, end quote. No room for exceptions there. And so much for Frankie, the so-called progressive pope. And I think infinite dignity, I think infinite stupidity is, in my opinion, a better word for this little thing.
Well, it could be that he's progressive in a different sense, that his age is progressing. Oh, yay, yay.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's turn back those wheels of history, right? Like, no, don't. Please don't. Yeah, could be worthy of a really wrong. However, I'm afraid I could be too, in a way.
Oh, were you wrong, Andras?
Yes, I'm afraid I have to make an apology and issue a correction as well about something that I said on our latest episode. And that was on Twitch, when you probably remember that I talked about the anniversary of the terrible natural disaster in L'Aquila in Italy back on the 6th of April 2009. Well, I seem to have propagated a myth about earthquakes, as our listener Odysseus was kind enough to point out in an email, for which I'm very grateful, by the way. So thanks a lot, man. It means a lot to us that we get these feedbacks, because we don't want to propagate myths.
We don't want to be
so
wrong.
What did I do?
Yeah.
No. So what did I do? To try and follow the recommended method outlined in the fantastic work called The Debunking Handbook. I don't know if you've heard about it. I'll start with the true statement instead of repeating my incorrect statement.
Okay. Yeah.
So what is true is that foreshocks of a major earthquake can happen with different frequencies and be of different scales. But unfortunately, smaller shocks cannot release enough built-up energy to avoid the big one.
Mm. Yeah.
It's not how it works. Contrary to what I said on the show. So this was basically my memory at fault, because for some reason, this is how I remembered it from university, where I, at one of my modules, we had covered things like this briefly, how these things happen. But this was a long time ago, and we know how unreliable our memories are, so I should have been more careful, and I should have not spoken just off the top of my head about things like this. Yes, this is why we need those checks and balances, because if you think about it, it makes a lot of sense what I just mentioned to be the fact. Earthquakes are measured on a logarithmic scale, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let it be the moment, the Richter, or the energy magnitude scale, whichever is used in a specific report. By the way, some of those reports on different earthquakes can completely mix those scales up. So I'm sure they can talk about the numbers that are on the magnitude scale, and they refer to the Richter scale and vice versa. But what's important about this is that because of them being logarithmic scales, when it comes to the energy released at a quake, a magnitude 5 and a magnitude 6 have a 32-fold difference between them. That's huge. And that could definitely not be released by smaller earthquakes. No. Because if we look at the frequency of occurrence, which is another very important thing to compare it to, when you go down by one unit of magnitude, so similarly, let's say 5 and 6, the increase in frequency of quakes goes up by a factor of 10.
Mm.
So not 32 or more, but the factor of 10. So even if there are 10 times more magnitude 5 earthquakes than a magnitude 6, altogether, they will not release enough energy.
Yeah, it's not the same energy.
Big quake. Mm. No, this is just how what it is like. And apparently, I'm now one of the many who have been wrong about this for a long, long time. And since I don't want to propagate inaccuracies, I'd like to express my gratitude again to our listener Odysseus, who, by the way, has an awesome name.
Yes,
and the fact that he's a seismologist is even more awesome. So thank you very much again.
Yeah, very
and
good.
Apologies
thank you.
For the mistake. And yeah, isn't that just a mind-blowing coincidence that on the day the episode was released, I landed in Taiwan?
Mm.
Yeah. I don't know what to say. Life sometimes throws things at you that are so interesting, like this coincidence. I don't see any special occurrence into this. It's just a brilliant coincidence. Yeah. All right, but with all of that, I think we should probably move on to the usual parts of the show. The first one of which is always Trish, also known as This Week in Skeptical History. Okay, and this week we commemorate someone whose birthday is on the 13th of April, and he happened to be an Italian chap by the name Paolo Frisi. And he was born in 1728. To a devout Catholic family. Why his life is of interest to us skeptics is the fact that he somewhat deviated from that Catholic path laid out to him as a result of acquiring a great wealth of knowledge about how the world actually works, something that we could also call science. At the age of 13, he'd gone to a religious school, a seminary of sorts in Milan, where apparently he didn't really show very deep religious feelings, but it was his best option to get quality education, which he really did. Philosophy, and especially natural philosophy, was what really caught his interest, and he was fascinated by things like Aristotle's, Newton's, and Galilei's thoughts, and went on to study them in depth. Unfortunately, at some point he got expelled for not being as devoted to his religion as to science, and had to take up preaching, just because that was what he ended up becoming, a priest.
Okay, so he stopped going to school for being not religious enough, and then he started preaching instead.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I guess there were different times back then.
Yeah, well, it was in the 18th century, so yeah, the things were different. But in the meantime, he became a skilled mathematician and astronomer, as well as a scholar of the history of science. And in that role, he wrote lots of works on the development of scientific ideas. So he was all fascinating with that. And he taught philosophy at the College of San Giovanni alle Vigne in Lodi, but had problems trying to publish some of his works on astronomy for the reason that they were based on a heliocentric worldview. And for the church, even in the 18th century, it wasn't something that was easy to tolerate. So, yeah, he had those kind of difficulties. But then he moved on to pure mathematical fields, and his works on that were accepted even by the church. But he was highly acclaimed among scientists and even got a professorship in 1753 at the University of Pisa, which was a university and a higher institution of very high acclaim. And he was also a corresponding member of the Paris Academy of Sciences, an associate of the Imperial Academy of St. Petersburg, a foreign member of the Royal Society of London, as well as a member of different academies in Europe, namely that of Berlin, Stockholm, Copenhagen, and Bern. So apparently he's the appreciation towards him from the fields of science and the field of religion really didn't match.
Yeah, so, not bad for a flunky, right? A person who's been thrown out of school.
Yeah, yeah. So his knowledge about things like hydraulics also deemed him one of the most frequently consulted people regarding the construction of canals and stuff. He was the go-to guy about a lot of things. And he studied electricity as well. And here's my favorite part of his biography. I think nothing says clearer, in your face religion, than the fact that he was the first ever person in current day Italy to install lightning conductors to buildings for their protection.
Wow.
That is very, well, I should say down to earth of an approach. Right.
And it's also very helpful if God is going to throw lightning at you for being not religious enough, then you can always, you do what you can, old man. I have this contraption here to protect me.
I can science the shit out of this and protect the building from you, God. Yeah. So, and we are in the 18th century. And fascinatingly, this was something that the only answer to from religion's side for centuries was prayer and avoiding church buildings in case of a thunderstorm. Yeah. And then comes this guy who just happens to study a bit of electricity, which was still not very well understood. And in his ideas were not always correct about how things work, but he did apply a healthy amount of critical thinking to how the world works and what can be manipulated, what can be done and what cannot be done. So let's celebrate him and let's celebrate this highly educated mind on his 296th birthday.
Okay.
So happy birthday, Signor Paolo Frisi.
Happy birthday. But I think it's fascinating that as late as this is, even though it's a long time ago, it's still fairly late in the world, and you could still be a person who did a polymath, who could do anything. You dabbled in mathematics, in electricity, engineering, in, I don't remember all the things you mentioned, but you could do everything, and it wasn't impossible to do that. Of course, today you have to specialize in something very obscure because the knowledge of everything is too much to take in. But back in the day, you could... Mm-hmm. You could just be a smart guy.
Yeah, and be a polymath just with that. Cool. Those were the days. All right. So that was our Trish for this week. And that brings us to the next part of the show, where we talk about what's new in Europe.
Right. Yes. So on this show, I've talked a lot about measles and how low vaccination rates directly correlates with a high number of cases. That's how it works. Mm-hmm. And that's very much true still. If we take Europe and look at Romania, for instance, we can see that the Romanian measles vaccination rate in 2022 was around 71%, which is bad. We want to stay above 95% when it comes to measles. So 71% is the lowest vaccination rate we know of in Europe at the moment. And wouldn't you know it, Romania in 2023 had 1,755 cases of measles, by far the worst in Europe. But this is measles, and that's not the only disease that we need to keep track of. Another very nasty one is pertussis, also known as whooping cough. Whooping cough is generally not very harmful in adults, but in newborn babies, it can be deadly. And even in non-lethal cases, it is terrible. Coughing fits that are so violent that it almost makes it impossible to breathe, turning your face blue or the baby's face blue. It's really horrible to watch a baby go through that. And newborn babies cannot be vaccinated. They are too young. You don't have time to do it. You don't want to vaccinate them as of day one. Can't do that. So the best way to prevent that is to A, vaccinate the people around babies, but also B, vaccinate the pregnant mother, because that actually works and is good practice. It's best practice, really. The BMJ, the British Medical Journal, just put out a report about whooping cough. and it doesn't look good. Vaccination rates have dropped dramatically, mainly due to the pandemic. Croatia seems to be worst off in Europe at the moment. They have over 6,000 cases of pertussis only in the 2.5 months that started this year. 6,000 cases. England had over 900 cases just in February, and that is compared to 850 in England in all of 2023. Czechia is reporting the highest cases in 60 years, and there's been a sharp rise in the cases of pertussis also in Denmark, Belgium, and Spain. And if this keeps up, we may have a pertussis epidemic on our hands. We may already be there. Something that equals the measles epidemic that we had way back in 2016 and 2017, 2018. So really terrible. I hope that people do have the possibility to get vaccinated and to vaccinate especially mothers-to-be. That is very important. But also, if you're not vaccinated, if you don't have a protection, don't go near newborn babies if you can help it, because it is really, really bad for them.
Mm. Yeah. Obviously, when it comes to this, we need to try to understand what factors can contribute to people deciding not to vaccinate when there is something available for avoiding those situations when you actually become ill. And recently, there was a paper published by Belgian researchers, and they were trying to assess that very thing. What they tried to match it with was the views about alternative medicine, nature and God, and how they can change or how they can potentially affect vaccination intentions in people. And, well, it was basically three studies combined into one. So it was a cross-sectional study with more than 8,000 participants. And there were different parts of a Belgian vaccination campaign when they tried to assess what the different factors on vaccination intentions were. Well, it looks like the results show that when someone is very highly attached to scam practices, so so-called alternative medicinal practices, they are much more likely to decide not to vaccinate. And on the other end of the spectrum, when there is a very strong trust in medical institutions, that has a very positive effect. So it makes it more likely for people to vaccinate. It's only a correlational result that they could find. Obviously, it doesn't necessarily explain what the causal relationship might be between the two.
But it makes sense, though. A lot of people who follow scam or believe in scam and disbelieve in vaccines, very often they have a mistrust of authorities, they have a mistrust of conventional medicine. So probably that's what it comes from. They don't trust the conventional medicine, so they turn to other things and they stop vaccinating and they go to homeopathy and other nonsense.
Yeah, and it's not only that, because obviously what's important, because it's a different layer of all this, is that when people have a primacy of nature kind of attitude, that they say that whatever is happening in nature is much stronger than what we could do, so our natural ability to fight off a disease is much stronger, and I should not intervene with anything that is man-made, that is artificial. That was shown as well to have a very strong effect, which was not a surprise. So the results of this don't come as a surprise. It's just we need to understand it even more in depth to be able to try and mitigate that. So yeah, pieces of research like this are very important, but not enough for us to understand it. Yeah. But it's interesting to look through that piece of research.
Yeah. I think the solution is hard, but simple at the same time. It's education, education, education. But then, of course, you can't convince everybody anyways. But I think that's the only thing we have to fight this with. I have some more medical news. And this is just a quick update. This is about a familiar villain who we have featured before on this show, Didier Raoul. The French biologist and researcher He's a researcher into infectious diseases, and I think he's pretty smart. He has done some good things in the past, but he's touting a lot of crazy things. He became infamous for arguing that hydroxychloroquine is a good treatment against COVID, which there was no evidence for. And everybody was very, well, maybe, but why should it be? And then, of course, it got out of hand and a lot of people started believing it, partly because of Didier Raoul. And then we had such stable geniuses as Donald Trump talking about it, and then it spread even more. So, yeah, crazy. So then he has been shown not just to be wrong about this, but he is also under a lot of critique for being an unethical researcher. We've talked about this before as well. And one professional opinion that we heard and quoted last time we talked about it is that his research method wouldn't pass the Declaration of Helsinki, which is, and the Declaration of Helsinki bans experimenting on humans. That's how bad it is. So he's not beyond that. So the short update this week is that now we have reached no less than 101 remarks against his different research papers that they call areas of concern, quote unquote, due to mostly about ethical misconduct. One of his papers was retracted last week on the same grounds, and that is in addition to the seven others that we have reported on before. So, yeah, the message is that if you are asked to, if you would like to volunteer to participate in any experiment run by Didier Raoul, you should just turn around and walk the other way as fast as possible. Don't look back. This is not a guy you want to have fiddle with your health with at all. So things like he has obtained one ethical approval to do one thing, and then he's used that permit to do over 200 different research experiments using the same number.
Yeah, so, I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, and not asking for permission, not giving information so that you can give your informed consent. That's what I want to say. So, not a good guy.
Asking for permission, asking for approval every single time you want to do an experiment is just so much of a hurdle.
So it's like, all the paperwork. My God,
who wants to do that?
Nobody wants to do that.
Come on. Bureaucracy. Yeah, this is the kind of reputation that you want for yourself, right? So as a researcher, to build trust. But what amazes me is how many people still quote him, still point to him as an expert on different things, even though we've heard him on many occasions just talking rubbish as well. So it's unbelievable that for a lot of people, it still cannot ruin his reputation.
No. But a lot of people have this charisma and this way of convincing people that leads you to accept a lot of what they're saying, even though it's nonsense. And I will mention that again before this show is over.
Okay. It's just a cognitive dissonance thing as well. So, like, when you show your support to someone very full-heartedly and very outspokenly, obviously it's much more difficult for you to accept that it's the person that you believe in who is wrong and not the other people who actually make much more sense. All right. So, I'm really eager to find out what you would like to talk about that you hinted at. So why don't we move on to finding out who's been really wrong lately?
Yes. So the subject for today's award has been mentioned by me before, and I have given talks about him even, but he has never received a really wrong. So I think he deserves that, and that's what he's going to get today. I am talking about Swedish charlatan Thomas Eriksson, known for his best-selling series of books about personality types, which is pure pseudoscience. I mean, personality types could be a real thing, but his version of it is pseudoscience. Eriksson is writing about so-called DISC analysis. That's D-I-S-C. And that stands for dominant, influential, steady, and compliant. And this theory purports to describe different personality types, which they very conveniently, and to make it easier to remember, they call them red, yellow, green, and blue people. So red people want to decide everything. Yellow people want to be seen. They're very extrovert. Green people are very social. And blue people want to do everything by the book to follow the rules. That's the very, very simple summary of how it's supposed to be. And of course, it is a simplification. And the simplification is so hard that it has no basis in reality. It is very seductive, though, because it's easy to learn, easy to understand from a theoretical point of view. It was invented by a failed psychologist. He was called William Moulton Marston in the 30s, I think. And he didn't do any experiments or any research to do that. He was just sitting alone in his room and made it up. He just dreamed up all these categories and decided that
As you do.
Yeah, I mean, it sounded good to him, so why not? He was quite a character, though, this Marston guy. And he went out on to invent his own version of a lie detector. And we all know that those do not work. He also created the superhero called Wonder Woman, who coincidentally has a lasso of truth, or whatever it's called. So if she binds the bad guys with her lasso, they cannot lie. So this is basically a version of the lie detector. Anyway, this is not about Marston.
So did he really invent Wonder Woman? Then all is forgiven. Come on.
Okay. I take it back. No, but okay. So, but this is not about Marston. Marston was quite a character. He wasn't a scientific guy at all, but he was very creative. Let's put it that way, to be fair to him. Now, back to Thomas Erikson. He wrote his first book about disc analysis in 2014. He discovered it a few years before. He read a book and found that this was fantastic. It took a year or two for this first book to get going, but then it became a huge hit. And in the marketing of the book, Erikson claimed that he, Erikson, was a behavioral scientist. It has later turned out that he never studied anything at university level at all. He is not a psychologist, he's not a behavioral scientist, nothing. He was just lying. The book itself is full of pseudoscience and all these made-up ideas. And it promises the reader, it's very seductive because it promises the reader, even on the cover, I think, that they, after having read this book, will be very good at dividing people around them into these different groups. So, and not just that, you will be able to spot a red person, a blue person, and a green person, but also you will be able to handle them. You will learn how to handle them so that you can manipulate them really into doing what you want them to do. Not like, well, it is creepy in a way, but you're not hypnotizing them, but you know how to talk to a red person in a way that the red person likes, and then that person will be more favorable to you than before. All of that. And it's all nonsense. It's not true. But there have been research into this way later after Marston, and it found that it didn't work. These are not the characteristics to divide people into. And this has been pointed out to Erikson many, many, many times. In fact, he got the Confounder of the Year award in 2018 by the Swedish skeptics, who lined up exactly why this was wrong. And he just said, well, no, you're wrong. That's his answer. We're telling him scientifically why he is wrong. And he says, no, you're wrong. And then he just continues. And he has poured out new books almost every year since 2014 on this very subject, and they have been translated into many languages. It's very, very popular. It's been sold all over the place. I can tell you the names of the books. The first one was Surrounded by Idiots. So you are supposed to learn how to understand why people around you behave like idiots. It's not because they are idiots. It's because they are not the same color as you. So they think differently. All bullshit, made up. So Surrounded by Idiots was followed by Surrounded by Psychopaths, where you were promised how to spot a psychopath. Then there was Surrounded by Bad Managers. So that explained why you always were misunderstood by your manager. He was a different color than you, and that's why you always feel that your manager is bad. But then he realized that managers have quite a lot of money, and they wouldn't buy that book. You know, you can't sell a book to a manager called Surrounded by Bad Managers. So immediately afterwards, he gave out a new book called Surrounded by Lazy People, which explained why your employees wouldn't do what you told them to do.
Oh, yeah, of course, you're not a bad manager. It's your employees from that point of view. Yeah,
right. So, and then it was Surrounded by Setbacks, which was it was on the same theme. Then there was Surrounded by Narcissists, and then Surrounded by Energy Thieves. And now, last week, he launched his eighth book in the series. It's called Surrounded by Liars. With no irony at all, he is actually the biggest liar of them all, but that's not what the book says. About that, about lying, about the book, he has said that, or rather the publishers have said that he is, Thomas Eriksson, is the Swedish author who's been translated into the largest number of languages in the world, which would be, I think, 56. I don't know if that number... I don't know if that number is correct. It could be, but probably it's an exaggeration. But even if it was true, people immediately pointed out that Astrid Lindgren, who wrote children's books, most famously the one about Pippi Longstocking and several others, she has been translated into 109 languages. So already there, he's lying. It's not true. And this is what he does. He just keeps on telling whatever he likes and expect people to believe it. And ironically, the latest book, if you read on the cover, it claims to teach you about fake news. And you can't make this up. All his books are proven to be BS. But he is, as I said before, hinted at before, he's very charismatic. So a lot of the time, it works. He goes out and he's very much a motivational speaker employed by companies. So they invite him to tell the employees why they have all of these problems. He gives all these charts and he tells them how to find out how you find out what color you are and how to handle the other people. And it doesn't work. It's just nonsense. So for being a charlatan and making up all this nonsense, pretending that there is science when there is nothing. There's no science behind this. Thomas Eriksson gets this week's award for being really wrong.
And it's well deserved.
Mm.
Wow. I've heard about this from you on several occasions. I think you gave a talk on this at Skepticamp when we were touring Australia 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I think you mentioned it then as well.
I'm going to continue to mention him. As long as he writes new books, I will talk about this because this is terrible. Really.
Very rightly so. Yeah. So please do. Because... It's just ridiculous how he scams the world. It's
so annoying.
Not more than 100 languages that his works have been translated to, even if it's just one translation, it's exactly one more than it should be. So
yeah, but it's not just that he is making millions on this. I think he is. Also that he's spreading this misinformation and people are running around in Sweden dividing people into red, blue, yellow people. This is not just me saying so. I see it all over the place. It's become part of the popular culture in Sweden now that people talk about this. And even as an insult, oh, you shouldn't be such a blue person. It's so ingrained in the culture now that you can say that to somebody and that person will understand exactly what you mean. Everybody knows about this and it's all made up. Bah.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, thanks very much for that. And
thank you.
We are expecting you covering it every single time he publishes his new idiocy. but that basically brings us to the end of the show. I'd like to encourage people to get in touch with us. That's not only great help if you give us feedback, but if you do it on any of the podcast sharing applications like iTunes or Apple Podcasts or Amazon or Spotify or wherever you listen to us, please leave a review. 5 stars would be ideal if you think of us like that. And a detailed review is always appreciated as well. But you can get in touch with us by sending us an email as well to info@theesp.eu. You can find us on X, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook, you can like our Facebook page. So yeah, go on and do that.
If you become a patron as well, then you can send us messages on the Patreon system or website. People do that. That's always very much appreciated. If you want to become a patron, the address is patreon.com/DESP. And then you can support our show with a few dollars or euros or whatever amount you want per episode. That's how it works. But you can also do it monthly and say, I only consent to this much money per month. So, you know, we're not spamming you with fake episodes or whatever. You can decide the level yourself. And if you do, and if you are a patron, I'd like to thank you very much for being that. That's very much appreciated. And we do have costs, and it's a lot of work we're putting into this. We don't expect to be paid, but it's very nice when we can use some of the money to pay for things that we have to pay for.
Yeah, that's correct. So many, many thanks for that. But obviously, we cannot finish the show without sharing a quote with our listeners, lest they point out that we missed something. So why don't we move on to that part of the show, which is the quote. And this week's quote is from Professor Ellis Roberts, British researcher, presenter and science communicator, and former president of Humanists UK, and just an amazing person to listen to. She always makes a lot of sense, and she's very skilled at expressing even critical thoughts towards people in a very kind way. So that is very helpful when you try to communicate skepticism as well. But the quote is the following. Educated guesswork is what science is. You form hypotheses, test them against the evidence, and if they fit the evidence, you can assume you've got close to the truth.
Yeah, that's very good. Good way of putting it. Because it also indicates that sometimes you get close to the truth. You never get the absolute full truth. You get closer and closer to what you can regard as true, but there's always room to improve your knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah. So that part of assuming it, that assumption that you've achieved that is always there. So you cannot know for sure. And the other thing is that the truth itself can probably not reveal itself. But we can try. We can try moving towards it. And that's what scientific endeavor is about. So we'll keep reporting on what's interesting in that realm, but that really brings us to the end of this episode. So Pontus, I'd like to thank you for this week.
Thank you very much.
It's been a great pleasure, as always. And I'd like to thank our listeners as well for tuning in. Please keep doing so. And until next week, goodbye.
Hej då.
Visla.
Tschüss.
This has been your ESP experience. The show is produced and recorded by the ESP.eu. Join us again next time, but until then, please send your feedback, comments, or death threats to info@theesp.eu. We would also love to hear your ideas and suggestions regarding future episodes, as well as news from your country of residence that might interest others across the continent. If you have a local event or organization to promote, please don't hesitate to let us know, as we are more than happy to help. All music in the program was written and performed by Keisha J. Gray and George Schwab and is used with their permission. Please check out our webpage at www.theesp.eu, follow us on Twitter @ESPodcast_EU, and like us on Facebook. I
I don't know how you can believe.
Quote, a child is always a gift, always a gift, end quote.
Unfortunately, eventually, at some point, that there are too many things that basically mean the same. So, quote Professor Ellis Roberts.
Sorry. Can you please make a pause so I can make the doom 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 thing?
Ah, okay. Okay. Here's the pause.
I can record a pause.
Please keep doing, not geep, keep. Please keep. So I'd like to.